Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious compassion and awareness and responding to your email questions. Today's show is pre-recorded, so please don't call us today. You can call us again when we're back on the air live. And we'll be with you in just a couple of minutes.
Cynthia Bryan.
And I'm Heather Brittany.
And we're the hosts of Star Style, Be the Star You Are radio show. Our show is dedicated to helping you discover and reach your full potential.
This one-hour program features interviews with guests and experts that will help us to make the best opportunity that life has to give us.
Every week, we have interviews with best-selling authors with books that you want to read. So join us every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. on World Talk Radio.
Vitality is a natural expression of health, success, and fulfillment. And yet it's rare to meet people bubbling with vitality. That's because most of us push ourselves too hard. And when we trigger the internal alarms that tell us to change our diets, attitudes, or activities, we ignore them. Allowing outside pressures to override our internal alarms undermines our health, sabotages our success, and limits our potential. If you're ready to reclaim your natural vitality, to begin living a life you love, visit thevitalyou.com.
To reach a show host or guest during the live show, dial toll-free in North America 866-613-1612. Or if outside the USA and Canada, dial 001-858-268-3068.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
All right.
I'm good. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and this show is one in which we get to talk to those folks who write emails to us.
Yes.
And when we first started the show, we had quite a good mix of live callers and folks writing emails.
Yes.
But lately, blessedly, we have so many callers that we don't get to our emails. So
yes,
this is a great opportunity to catch up with those folks. Otherwise, we're going to have to stop saying, send us an email, because they're gonna know that you send an email, and what that means is you never hear from those folks again.
Yes, that's true, and I'm going to have to stop saying that we'll be responding to your email questions when I'm not responding
to
the email questions.
That's right. They just fall into a void somewhere. Actually, I suppose you read them regardless.
I do read them regardless.
Yeah, but it's just not the same feeling for them. So I'm glad that we have a chance now to do this as I go off to Africa again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
And I know that this is, you know, not a live show and all of that, but still, it'll be, I think, our first show after the bridge walk.
Yes.
Or our second show, I guess, because we'll have another one between them. But just to acknowledge again, as we're going to do it every opportunity for probably the next several months, what an extraordinary event that bridge walk was, and extend the invitation to people for to join us for next year's bridge walk, September 8th,
yes.
2007.
Yes, September 8th, 2007.
Mm-hmm. When we were talking to people from Zambia a few months ago in July, actually, and we were talking about our goal of having 500 people and raising $100,000. It seemed so kind of extraordinary even to think in terms of that large. And then to have completed the event, and with about 250 people, half the number of people that we were hoping for, we actually are anticipating by the time all the donations come in, we will have reached that $100,000 goal, and it's just a miracle.
It's just incredible.
Yeah. That's very,
and to
very
think
exciting.
Of all the good that will come of that is really exciting.
Yeah, that was when they, I actually didn't know what the total was. I heard it at the same time that everybody felt that the walk heard the total. And the first thought that went through my mind was, well, there's nothing stopping us now.
Yes.
And we can just get over there and get going and go just as far and as fast as we possibly can make all of this happen, which in our experience is pretty darn far and fast. So there are going to be a lot of kids eating who haven't been eating, certainly able to fulfill our commitment to the children that we're already caring for. The medical clinic is on its way. It's just it's a wonderful thing. So our gratitude to everyone who participated is just through the roof.
Yes.
It took everybody. Everybody to make it happen, and everybody did.
Great.
So before I talk through this entire hour, have any emails for us?
I do. I have a big stack of them here. Hi, Sherry. I first want to say that I have so much appreciated all of your books. They have really inspired me. I guess I'm writing for some advice. I've been in counseling for some time, and it has been helpful in many ways. What I continue to struggle with, though, is being able to connect with and express slash release my emotions. I can often feel very anxious and in my head, but know that underneath that are some other emotions. But this anxiety wall seems so thick and difficult to penetrate, and also very familiar. The emotions underneath feel close to the surface, but don't ultimately rise above the layer of anxiety. This leaves me feeling stressed and like I'm containing a lot, kind of like a balloon, where the air is my emotions and the plastic layer just won't pop to let some air out. I hope this makes some sense.
That's a great image, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I would love to hear your thoughts about this. Thank you kindly from a listener in Toronto.
Okay. Well, anxiety, my goodness. That's, you know, I'm fond of pointing out that anxiety is the human experience. It's how a human being knows that he or she is alive. And I don't know that that's always been the case, but in our modern world, it certainly seems to be. It's just it's really nothing more than the life force, but it is concentrated in what we talk about as the third chakra, which is at the solar plexus. And because we are in such a violent state of conflict with our life force, it really becomes unpleasant at times. And what I mean by that is that we tend to do a lot of things that stimulate the system. So we're drinking coffee, we're eating sugar, we tend to be sedentary, we have very stressful lives. We're in traffic, we're in jobs where there's a lot of pressure. Everything moves very, very quickly. So the system is constantly just kind of on at a fever pitch, and we do very little to allow all of that energy to pass through. So it's constantly getting blocked up. And then the blockage gets identified as the problem, because when that energy gets blocked up in the third chakra, and that's the will center, right? So it's the do center of the system. And the energy gets blocked up there, and what it's doing is sending signals to the mind that there's something wrong. So we have that little way of looking at things. First there's movement, then there's sensation. We have a thought about it, or a label that goes with it, an emotional reaction to that, and a conditioned behavior that's attached to that sequence. So there's all that energy trapped in the will center, blocked there. The mind, the conditioned mind, is getting signals that says, oh, there's something wrong, there's something wrong, there's something wrong. They've got to do something, got to do something. And then, of course, the reaction to that anxiety is often fear, and the person is in a state of misery, as as the writer has indicated. So my first encouragement is to, number one, attend to it. Just become really familiar with exactly what that feels like. Not what it, what we think about it, but what it actually feels like. Because the anxiety is just a lot of energy in the body. So if we begin to, not as a should, not as a punishment, not because we're the wrong person, but just because we want to do experiments and get to the bottom of this, if we cut back on the things that we do that cause the system to be stressed in that way that results in anxiety, so we cut back on sugar, we cut back on coffee and anything with caffeine in it and that sort of thing. If we take a more balanced approach to things like work, and we start training ourselves to sleep better, and we exercise. That's the big one with anxiety. If we get out and move the body so that that energy can be dissipated in a way that takes care of the system, we'll be way ahead of the game. So that I would encourage the writer to start with all of that, and then let us know how it goes, and we'll talk about next steps.
Yes. So pay attention to everything that comes up with that.
Uh huh.
And see the balance that's going on in life in terms of exercise, sleep, work, sugar, all those things that are stimulating the system.
Yeah, get that caffeine out of the system, first of all.
Get the caffeine out of it.
You know, often people who struggle with anxiety are addicted to coffee.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, I've said this many, many times, and I don't know if anybody ever takes me up on it, but, you know, the person who said, well, I don't really feel anxious. I don't know what anxiety is. Well, you just go down to your local coffee place and drink about 3 big cups of coffee in a row, and you'll know immediately what anxiety feels like. So that's a, you know, that's just a first step that we can do for ourselves, that once we get past the addiction is really pretty painless.
Yes.
And for a lot of people, that takes care of it. If they just do these things, these physical things that I'm suggesting, the anxiety goes away.
Uh-huh.
Now, if it's something more than that, then, you know, then we take the next steps to look into what that is. But often that's all it takes.
Great. Mm. Great. Thank you, Sherry.
Uh-huh.
Here's the next email. Hi. You are probably going to read this and think, this woman is crazy and just needs to check into a mental institution. But here goes. I'm having problems with work. It seems to be something that comes up time and time again for me. So I know it is just me. I always feel that after working at some place for some time, that there is something wrong with me and that they feel this or know this about me and do not like me. It's very frustrating, as it is always hard to explain to my counselor or to anyone, and it sounds and is crazy. It is not everyone at work, but some people and those that I work directly with. My feelings about myself become a self-fulfilled prophecy, I guess, and I feel that it can never be undone, that I am terrible or that there is a terrible rumor that they know about me or think about me, and I have no idea and can never know for sure. I know this is extremely paranoid. Then it starts to spiral from there, and I start feeling really depressed. Some days I come in, and I just don't care what anyone thinks. But then other days, I get oversensitive to people not speaking to me, etc. I know they must be reacting to my feelings about myself, but inside my head, I just say to myself that there is something seriously wrong with me, and they have found out what it is, or instinctually know that I am a horrible person. I also have a physical problem, which is genital herpes, and I had dated someone from an online site dealing with this problem. I printed out an email at work as I was going on a date that day, and the email never printed. I envisioned that it printed somewhere else other than my local printer, and that people found out and that they know about this, and that is why they treat me differently. Whether this is real or all in my mind, my mind still believes it, and I still feel horrible. I would like to go to the retreat, but then I think maybe I am way too screwed up and need something a lot more than a retreat.
Okay. Time out. Yeah, time out. We don't need to go any farther than this. Well, let's see. Where shall we start? Number one, this is what we have when we get involved in, which almost everybody does, okay? So there's nothing personal about any of this. It is not special. It's not unique. It's not unusual. It's called being in an intimate relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning. So there's the voice inside the head that has one goal, and that is its own survival. And it survives by being the center of the universe. And it certainly has succeeded in this case. So there's truly nothing mysterious going on here. As long as this person is involved, has as a primary relationship the voice in the head, this is what's going to be going on. As soon as that's not the case, all of this is going to fall away. And people who are not in an intimate relationship with the voice inside their head that hates them don't do things like printing out emails at work that would be extremely embarrassing if seen or found. So, those kinds of decisions all feed into that whole cycle that's being talked about. If none of that conversation existed inside this person's head, there would be no issue and there would be no problem. So it's quite simple. It's very difficult for people, not because it's difficult, but because they are so intimately connected with that voice. And it seems like if I'm not listening to that voice, if I'm not following that voice around through life, then something awful will happen to me. I won't know who I am. I'll lose my identity, which is true. You will lose your identity. And, of course, if the identity is one of this level of suffering, great. What a great thing to lose. And as far as I'm way too bad for a retreat like this, that's just nonsense. We don't know any really bad people. We don't. I say that to people all the time. You know, I'm in a workshop somewhere. I'm in a retreat. I look out at these people, and they all are convinced that they're the worst person in the world. I mean, you couldn't get a handful of sins and crimes if you blend a whole bunch of them. You know, these are just not bad people. And I'm such a hopeless case. No, in fact, we're all so average that's the last thing ego wants to hear. But it's true. We are all so very average. Yeah. This is not a big problem. But it has to be faced. And facing down those voices is no small task.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, it's like you've been away from home for a month. You went on vacation, and you left your relatives there house-sitting for you, and you come back, and the place is just completely trashed. It's going to be a lot of work to get it fixed back up again, but that's all it is. It's a lot of work. It's not a tragedy. It's not hopeless. It's not overwhelming. It's just some work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's work we all have to do. We all have to do it. No one is free of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the rewards are
huge.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah. And it puts us in a nice crowd of people. People who are attempting to wake up and in suffering. People who are attempting to face their karma, to face it down and be free. It's a very nice group of people.
Oh, it's a wonderful group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so supportive in that Sangha sense.
Yeah.
For me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm hoping that this person will, in fact, come on retreat and then let us know.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay, we have another email.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Sherry and Michael. I'm somewhat new to paying attention and the awareness practice and have a question, or several, but we'll start with this one. In an effort to stay present and not live in the past or future, where do memories fall? Is it appropriate to still, quote, walk down memory lane, unquote, in my mind? I suspect that it's okay as long as I'm not in a story, but that's not easy to do, as I'm sure you know. Your thoughts are appreciated.
So I don't know if you were around for this conversation, Michael, but I think it was in a retreat last week. Something inspired this statement, no past, no future, no problem.
Wow.
And we all...
That's a bumper sticker moment, huh?
Isn't it? And we all just kind of stopped and looked at each other. And we're actually going to do a T-shirt with it, with the the new little monk character.
I love it.
Because it's true. I mean, with no past and no future, you just can't have problems. You can have situations. You can have life events. You can have whatever is going on now. But it's the going into the story of it that makes it a problem. So can you go down memory lane? Well, memories arise in the moment. That's not a problem. Any more than thoughts arising in the moment is a problem, or ideas, or fantasies, or creative notions, or inspirations, or whatever it is. Everything arises in the moment. It's what we do with that that gets us into trouble. So can a memory arise without problems? Absolutely, because it's arising in the present. Can you take a walk down memory lane without getting into trouble? Probably not. But I would want the writer to experiment with that. See what happens when a memory arises and there's just an awareness of the memory. See what happens when you go with it. Start a conversation about it. Oh, yeah, and that, huh, and that, and then that's when I met so-and-so, and, huh, and then we and just see what happens.
So pay attention and see what happens.
Yeah, just experiment with it.
Great.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing, in awareness practice, there's nothing we can't do. There's nothing we shouldn't do. There's no, as I'm fond of saying, no reason to do or not do anything. We're absolutely free. All we're looking at is, does this particular activity lead towards suffering or away from suffering? And if we don't want to suffer, then we learn not to do the things that result in suffering. Not because doing them makes us a bad person, but because we know from our own experience that they cause us to suffer, and we don't want to suffer.
Yes, and with practice, it becomes easier to see which is which.
Oh, yes. Yes, I love it. So it's, you know, I'm new to paying attention. And that's it. You know, suddenly, wow, I can pay attention. Now that I'm paying attention, I see all kinds of stuff. I see how I have a tendency to say things like this, or to react like that, or to express such and such. And I notice that when I do, this is what happens. You know, and then we go through the stage of, oh, and I'm a bad person because I said such. No, then we work our way through that and realize that that's not the point. That's not what we're talking about. All we're talking about is, you know, when I explode and start cussing at people and telling them what they're doing wrong, it makes them unhappy and makes them dislike me. And when people are unhappy and dislike me, it's hard for me to be happy. So as I conclude that of my own experience, then I feel inspired to see how I can react differently. How might I be in the world that doesn't have this result? Now I'm on to some good stuff.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Everything's available there when we're paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a wonderful... I'm new to paying attention. That's a wonderful thing. I'm new to awareness practice. That's a wonderful thing. it is regrettable that we have to slog through that. Okay, now I'm seeing everything, and conditioned mind is telling me that this is proof that there's something wrong with me.
Yes.
It's just a stage. We just have to go through it. We just have to realize, no. That's just how conditioned mind trains us not to be aware, not to pay attention. You know, if I get in trouble every time I notice something about myself, I'm being trained not to notice anything. And we want to, you know, we want to catch on to that one and sidestep it pretty quickly.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. Sherry, let's take a quick break here.
All right.
And we'll come back in just a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up next on Open Air, in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and responding to your email questions. Today's show is pre-recorded, so please don't call us today. You can reach us when we're on the air live again. Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio.
Sherry, Michael, we have to get another travel tip. We just have to. You know, I'm getting ready to be on airplanes for, you know, like days on end.
Yes.
And I could use some new travel tips.
That's a fabulous.
I know that travel tip. I have it memorized. Now, the good news is somebody just told me that the restrictions have been lessened a little. So now if we take a plastic Ziploc bag, we can take all kinds of things on the airplane that we were going to have to do without. So I'm very excited about that, and I need an update.
Great. So you're now allowed to bring a bottle of water again. Is that right?
You're now allowed to, if you bought it in the airport, you can have a bottle,
oh,
a sealed bottle of water. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. It's, I mean, life is good.
Life is good. Hi, Sherry and Michael. I need help with a very difficult struggle I'm having with whether or not to continue taking the psychiatric medications I've taken for the past 15 years to, quote, stay on track, unquote. That is, stay employed, live independently, etc. Diagnoses range from schizoaffective to bipolar to major depression to anxiety disorder. In the past, every time I've tried to decrease the doses, I have ended up in psychiatric hospitals for a short while. I have been stable for the past year and a half and obviously want to continue that way. However, with all the spiritual and emotional work I have done over the past 30 or so years, I feel at a place now where I am strong enough and aware enough to continue without the help of the medications. In addition, I take daily narcotic medications for chronic debilitating headaches. I think all this medication could be interfering with my spiritual growth and want to see how I can manage operating from awareness. My question is, what role, if any, do you think psychiatric medications and narcotics play in inhibiting our spiritual growth? I also want to add that whenever I start to decrease the psychiatric medications, I have so much energy I can't contain it. And then I use the narcotics to numb myself and control the excess energy. I think I already know the answer to that one. Practice, 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 right? Thanks and blessings from a listener.
Well, let's begin this with, you know, one of my standard answers to things like this, which is, I don't know. So, you know, once we establish that, and I will go back to a story that I've probably been told on this radio show many, many, many times. I don't have any idea. And that was the process of having Graves' disease. Graves' disease is hyperthyroidism, and you know, Western medicine, as soon as the diagnosis comes in, the choices that they give are to kill the thyroid or remove the thyroid. And, you know, as a Buddhist, killing and removing things is just not first on my list. And so I expressed a disinterest in that. And the reaction to that is basically, well, you're going to be sorry. Because you know, this is going to come back down the road. And then when it does, it's going to be really bad. You know, it's just not an orientation to life that I care to support. So I went on a project to see if I could take care of my system in a way that would enable me to very slowly, over whatever period of time it took, reduce the medication and have my system stabilize. And it was, now, you know, I've been doing awareness practice for a long time. And I can promise anybody who wants to attempt something like this that it is a long haul, super attentive process. So I did not say, okay, I don't want to take this medication anymore. I want to stop taking the medication, because there was something going on in my life, in my system, in my body, that caused me to have this situation. And so if I didn't deal with that, just stopping the medication was going to put me right back where I was, right?
Yes.
So it's a whole process of looking and seeing and learning, and now this person indicates that he or she has been doing this kind of work for a long time, and this is quite a list of symptoms.
Yes.
To talk about getting off of the medication, for me, I would approach that as a lifetime work. And I would certainly never think about doing that while keeping life the same, because there's something about the orientation, the orientation to life, the way the system operates, that is contributing to this. Yeah? Because body and mind are one.
Yes.
So for me, what I realized is that I kept my body under a fair amount of stress. I was traveling constantly. I would eat whatever. I would drink caffeine to wake up when I needed to wake up, and that sort of thing. And so the body was extremely stressed. If I was going to get off this medication, I had to change the whole way I was living.
Yeah.
And I had to do that before I started to get off of the medication.
Yeah.
And then when I started to get off the medication, it was in such... The changes were so minute over such a long period of time that the body was never stressed through that effort.
That effort to get off of the medication.
That's right. It never needed to react, because the change was so minuscule that there was really nothing to react to.
Yes.
So that's my encouragement to the person. The person who says, you know, I want to get off the medication, is somebody who really needs to be looked into.
Uh-huh.
You know, why? Why do you want to get off the medication?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like everything's working.
Yes.
Why do you want to get off the medication? Well, it might be interfering with my ability to be aware. Okay, well, are we going somewhere here with awareness? Is this, you know, do we have a... Is there a destination, a goal? Are we in a contest? What?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always suspicious of that person, as I would have been suspicious in me.
Yeah.
If somebody just said, I don't want to be taking this med. Okay, well, tough. I need this medication.
Yes.
And I'm going to take it for as long as I need it. When I don't need it, I won't need it.
Yes.
And I'm willing to go through any amount of practice to get to the place where I don't need it. But that means no sugar, no caffeine, no, you know, no pushing, no going without sleep, no stress. No, okay, let's do all that. Let's make all those changes. And then see if the body still wants or needs the medication. Might not.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And people will say, well, you know, how can you learn to be not stressful in this life? Well, it's amazing how little stress a person can have in this life. Can you be without any? Well, probably not. But if you try to be without any, that's just making a contest out of that.
Yes.
But we can undo a lot of that and still live right here in this world.
That's really interesting about that part, making a contest about getting off the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I can see myself, you know, making contests out of everything.
Yeah. Oh, there's whatever is there, and then there's ego trying to take advantage of it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I have a friend right now who's recovering from surgery and is on a program to get out of the hospital bed and be able to climb upstairs to the bedroom, you know, by the end of the week. Well, what's that about?
Yeah.
You know, you yeah. stay in the hospital bed downstairs until until walking up the stairs is easy.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's that I want this. Well, that's not a good enough reason. It's not a good enough reason to sacrifice somebody.
Yes.
And that's what it is. So the I who wants whatever this is going to sacrifice the body to have it.
Hmm.
And after a while, what we get to, and for most of us, it's with a great dose of shock, what we get to is at a certain point, the body just says, no can do. It's not even, you know, it's not even a retaliation or, you know, that there's no anger or resentment or I'm going to get you. It's just, I can't sustain your better ideas any longer. Yeah, you've pushed me as far as I can be pushed. I can't do it any longer for you. I'd like to help you out here, but I can't.
Yes, yes. And in that, there's a requirement to know what's going on with that contest and what ego wants and being clear about what's ego and what's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why we practice awareness and learn to pay attention so that we can be sensitive.
Yes.
So that we can be attentive, aware of, present
yes.
to. And there's no greater place to start than with the vehicle, which we could call this incarnation, the vehicle that is enabling us to wake up and end suffering, to be aware, to pay attention.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question. Hi, Sherry and Michael. Thank you so much for having Open Air. This is the most inspirational radio show I've ever had the pleasure of listening to.
Wow.
I do have a question. I've been doing Zazen for many years, off and on. I feel it has allowed me to deal with life issues in a more compassionate way. However, as of late, I have had to deal with serious passive-aggressive backstabbing behavior in a coworker who I once considered a friend, and Zazen is not helping much. He frequently goes behind our backs to complain to our boss, and he tends to set people up to appear as if he is the saving martyr. I feel that there is little I can do to change his behavior. I am upset by it, and even more upset with my inability to deal with my own reactions to it. I do not want my career to suffer because of this individual, Mr. B, and I feel lucky that our boss and boss's boss seem to know that he is like this, and they tend not to take his word on these matters without asking his victims. Question: what would you suggest I do to either approach Mr. B or, more importantly, address my own reactions? I have never had to deal with a coworker like this before, and I don't like it and would like to get away. But is there something I can do while sitting to bring me back to center and perhaps see this situation more clearly? Thanks from an East Coast listener.
Well, now there's one we can all relate to, huh?
Yes.
And so the writer got to, what can I do to approach this Mr. B, or perhaps a more important piece of it is to deal with my own reactions. And, of course, I'm going to be very supportive of choice two and not at all of choice one.
Yes.
It occurred to me in listening to this to wonder how much of what's going on is a desire to be with the reactions and how much is a desire not to have them.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm using sitting practice to essentially avoid or sidestep, repress what's going on with me, then that's, in my world, that's a misuse of meditation.
Yes.
So I'm wondering what would happen if the writer actually allowed the feelings to be there. So, as you very well know, one of the big things that we work with is aspects of the personality. So the subpersonalities that, from a Buddhist perspective, look suspiciously like karma. So what Ram Dass would talk about is uncooked seeds. So the parts of us that are lurking around from heaven knows where, but are unfinished, and they're, they have their issues, their orientations, their unique orientations to life, and they're real. we think we would be happier if they weren't, but they are. And so, there I am in that situation, and there's a part of me who feels betrayed. There's a part of me who's really angry. There's a part of me who's fearful. There's a part of me who wants to retaliate. There's a part of me who wants to do exactly what this other person is doing. I want to go behind this person's back and tell everybody what, So all of these things that I get to see in this situation that I wouldn't have to face if this person would just be the right person.
Yes.
And for me, that's it's such a difficult and yet perfect opportunity for us to face that karma. And I would be very curious to know if the writer had a, when I said, I want to do to that person exactly what that person is doing.
Yes.
That's where we see the connection. We never, it's very difficult for us, maybe never, but it's usually very difficult for us to imagine that the other person had a starting point as well. So I'm in that situation, and you've just done this thing to me, and it's like the whole world began right then. Okay, well, I was fine. Everything was fine until you did that. So if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't have this problem. Well, yes, actually, I had this problem, or I wouldn't have had that reaction to what you did. But the hard thing to see is, what's making you do what you're doing?
Uh-huh.
I know what's making me do what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
You. But what's making you do what you're doing? So we all have that kind of starting point. And when we see ourselves behaving in that way, it becomes much clearer that the other person probably has some sort of motivation as well.
Uh-huh.
Now, the advantage to me that this person has in this situation, and the reason that I'm going to encourage them really to go in this direction of looking at the aspects of the personality, owning the projections, that whole thing, is that the situation is actually in hand. You know, the boss knows what's going on. The
yes.
boss's boss knows what's going on.
Yes.
There's no actual danger here.
Yes.
It's just that this person is doing something that, yeah, most of us would be right in agreement is not a good way to act.
Yes.
It's not a great way to treat people. But it's not actually a problem. It would be a problem if the person had the power to actually do harm to others.
Yes.
But that's not what's going on. So it's easy then, it's easier for us to bring it back inside and say, okay, there's no real danger here, and yet I'm having this tremendous reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So what the heck is this triggering in me?
Mm-hmm.
And usually when we do that, we bring it back inside and say, oh, yeah, one of my personalities is Mr. B.
Yes.
And then one of my personalities is the part of me who reacts to Mr. B.
Yeah.
And then we have all of the other players.
Yeah.
When we bring it back like that and start owning it all within ourselves and allow the various parts of us to have their life experience and their reactions and bring some compassion and understanding to all of those ways that we are inside, we start seeing a little daylight, a little freedom around it.
Mm, yes, yes. I was just going to mention compassion and understanding, and then you said it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's what's missing. I can't have it for Mr. B because I don't allow it for myself.
Yes.
I don't get to act that way, and gosh darn it, nobody else should be allowed to act that way either. But we are all that way. Some of us we perceive as acting that way. Some of us act that way and we don't notice it. Some of us try really hard not to act that way by repressing whatever it is that's going on, but we're all doing it. Just like the earlier writer with the, you know I'm so strange and odd and, no. We're all on the same continuum.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. Sherry, we have about 5 more minutes left, and I have another question here.
All right.
Dear Sherry and Michael, greetings. I hope this finds you well. Could you speak a bit on the 4 foundations of mindfulness? I just came across this and would like to know more about it. From a listener.
Well, they'd have to tell me what they came across.
To let you know, I did a little Googling when I got this message, and 4 foundations, what I came across was being in contemplation of body, feelings, mind, and mind objects.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty straightforward, huh?
Yes.
So, as we are, because, you know, I don't know how many listeners know this, but, you know, there's Zen, and there are at least 3 major schools of Zen. Then we have Vipassana. We have Tibetan Buddhism. We have, you know, whatever others that I don't even know about.
Yes.
And so it's like, you know, asking a Christian something about Christianity.
Yes.
Well, are you talking about Quakers or Presbyterians or Southern Baptists or Mormons or Catholics or, you know, who are you talking about? Because it's not everybody, has the same language, has the same practices, has the same anything. So, you can read. People will come up to me all the time and say, "Well, now the Dalai Lama said blah blah blah," and so what about that? It's like you're asking a Baptist to interpret the Pope. I can't help you on this. So anyway, contemplation of body, feelings, mind, and mind objects. There you have it. So we're observing what goes on with the body, and observing is not the same as turning it over to conditioned mind for appraisal.
Uh-huh.
It's learning to live in awareness, attending to the body within the field of awareness. Emotions, the same way. Mind is divided into 2 categories, which I find easier to think about as the state of the mind and the content of the mind.
Yes.
And so that's what we're observing all the time. And
yes.
And not just in sitting meditation. We practice this in sitting meditation so that when we are walking around in the world, we're able to do the same thing. The awareness starts with the body. It expands. It extends to everything. We're aware of the sensations in the body. We're aware of what we're feeling, of the emotions. We're aware of what the mind is doing, the state of the mind, and how the mind is occupied. And we are attending to all of that from awareness. Very good practice. Mm-hmm. And notice that nowhere in it does it say, and then draw some really useful conclusions. The Buddha just hardly ever encouraged us to that. Conditioned mind, of course, wants to do that all the time. Okay, well, you're feeling this, so that must mean this, and what you should do then is this. And if you weren't feeling that, then this. Nope. This is back to that, I don't know if it was the original writer, but, going down memory lane. Can you go down memory lane? Probably not without getting into trouble. Can you reach conclusions about body, feelings, mind objects without getting into trouble? No. We don't need assessments, judgments, conclusions. We're just simply noticing.
Yes. I was thinking as you were talking that the conclusions take us into the future and the past and thinking we're getting somewhere and something
and
we can hold on to. And
yes, and something we need to do.
Uh-huh.
Which is where ego gets us all the time.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well then what do... Okay, all right, I've seen that. Now what do I do about it? Oh, we don't need to do anything about anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, now the wind is blowing. What should I do about that? You know, it's starting to rain. What should I do about that?
Yes. Well, Sherry, this has been really great.
I hear the music. It must be time to go.
Yes, it's been great to catch up with all these email questions.
It has. Let's do it again. Let's strive for being current.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.